Creed.
Okay, thank you, Ian, for, and Michael, and so we're going to reconvene. The next bullet, rezoning of PID numbers to resort zone from coastal rural zone, Western Heads, the attached map. So this was the gentleman who spoke at the public hearing.
That's right.
And, but campgrounds are allowed. Isn't glamping a campground?
It's more of a tourist accommodation.
I think he just wanted to be sure that he could do whatever he wanted associated with glamping business. It's a safe thing to do, I think.
Yeah, I think, and Wendy has had numerous discussions with him around the site. But I think it's more like the dome type.
Yeah. It was a, he was issued a development permit under the tourist establishment or tourist accommodation, so just like, it's a permanent structure, it's not a structure that's just going to be there temporarily, so.
But are not tourism accommodations allowed in the coastal rural R6 though?
Currently they are, but not under the new.
So they can only be in the hamlets?
Or there's the new rural commercial zone that would allow tourist accommodations, or the resort. He's specifically asking for the resort, but there's two rural zones that would allow that type of use. They're permitted broadly.
Ian, wouldn't this be what PAC did and considered for Pond Hook? That their request for the resort zone?
Exactly.
Extending?
And that's what White Point is in.
Right.
So therefore, as staff, and Ian as the worker behind these documents with staff and PAC for so long, you feel comfortable with that?
Yeah, I think the resort zone is a little bit more restrictive than, I guess, the rural commercial. So I guess you probably would be opening it up to potentially as many uses under the resort zone that he's requesting as you would under the CR zone. So this would apply particularly to his properties. So that's what he was requesting. So I guess as far as either one of the zones, probably you would stick with what he's requesting.
Council have any questions? Councilor Brown?
Where he's already started that, would he be grandfathered under the old rules, or has he just gotten the development permit and not gotten the building permit? So I'm not sure where the cutoff is on that.
So he only got a development permit for one because he just wanted to get that started and see how construction went on that.
Yes.
He's been planning for a long time to have more, but he didn't want to apply for any too early.
Okay.
So he'd be just grandfathered in
for that,
you know,
one.
For that one unit,
yeah. Yeah. But the intention was all along,
along
his talking was just to go that way.
Before he bought the property, he did lots of research on it.
Yeah.
Councilor Charlton?
So my understanding is that he bought this property knowing he could do what he wanted to do with it, and even though he could be considered grandfathered in potentially on partial parts of it, or if not all of it, he doesn't want to be a non-conforming use. He wants to just be conforming and know that he's, you know, abiding by those rules.
He would not only be non-conforming, but he would be able to expand beyond.
Right.
Well, we do, and just this is a broad comment for any other ones of these that come up, we do have a provision for expanding non-conforming uses by site plan approval.
So,
the road, it wouldn't be a hard, you know, we're not hard blocking expansion non-conforming uses. It would be another step, and if we can accommodate
right.
it now, we would.
But it would be additional.
That, the only thing you'd be able to do is expand on those, on the domes,
right.
as opposed to add more of it, like kind of amenities that he wants to have for that business.
Right, and he bought the land because he was able to do what he wanted to when he bought the land, so I get the request. I don't have an issue with it.
Check mark.
So therefore, throughout, once we, if and when we adopt these, anyone could apply for a rezoning at a later date. So if someone else in another coastal rural zone wished to have a tourist accommodation, because that's what you said, tourist accommodations are no longer allowed and they're proposed in the coastal resort zone, which takes up a big part of our coastline. And can someone tell me why tourist accommodations were deemed unacceptable in coastal resort zones?
In the coastal rural zone?
In the coastal rural zone?
Yeah, so with the move to hamlets, the idea was that, you know, we'd encourage most commercial uses to go into hamlet uses or into hamlet areas, but certainly recognizing there are in other areas like this one is. You know, so having that mechanism of going through a rezoning, it's pretty straightforward. It's not a, you know, if you're planning this type of business, it's not a, you got to plan for it, but it's not, you know, so that it's kind of a like, yeah, we're encouraging you to go to the hamlets, and if, but if not, there's a path for you
okay.
to go down to do it elsewhere.
So we'll check mark that one. And then we have, oh, Councilor,
so
Deputy Mayor Hughes.
To get this changed, he doesn't have to... You don't have to tell the people in the area that he lives that you're changing this?
Not if we're doing it right now.
No.
Okay.
We'll identify the changes that the council suggests based on the discussion today, changes from the document we went through first reading. So that information will become public that yes, we're rezoning or right. changing the zoning on these parcels.
And then a rezoning of two PIDs to inland rural from Lakeshore Residential, and that's in the Greenfield area, the Pontiac Lake area.
Yes.
So this is the flip.
Yeah, so there's a map attached. Both of these parcels would be on Sunhaven Drive in LaBelle. There's been a new person has acquired or is in the process of acquiring these lands. The use that he's looking at for the site doesn't conform with the SR zone, which is fairly restricted to the Lakeshore development zone in its permitted uses. So he wishes to see both of these parcels incorporated under the R5 zone that would enable him to use the properties for a sawmill operations, what's being proposed. So I know Councilor Brown is certainly familiar with the area.
Oh, right, I know who you mean now.
Yeah, the area that he bought, and my understanding was that he put the offer in on the land when it was still an R5. And between the time he put the offer in and closing date, was when we had first reading. So that's completely changed his plans. But that piece of land is also not part of the Greater Maliga Lot Owners Association. It's outside of that area. So it's not on directly on the water. So it's, you know, if I would have no problem seeing that rezoned to an R5 the way it was before. Maybe not the tiny little strip at the top of the map that goes out against the road, but that would still he would still have to have that buffer. And I think if that even if that piece of land wasn't rezoned, it would still give him the area he needed to do what he did without encroaching on his neighbors that are in the resort area. But if we're rezoning them all, then it's, you know, that whole area is outside of what's covered by any restrictive covenants.
Comments from council? You agree with that? Anyone opposed?
So, just for clarification, is it both properties, or just the edge parcel?
I think it would be fair to do both properties because they're both on private roads that are not governed by the Lot Owners Association, so they really have no say, no control, and they were zoned R5 when he bought them for that for that ruling.
May I ask who pays for the road upkeep if it's not under a lot owners association?
The road is kept up by the lot owners association to gain access, but they don't have any legal title to that road. So the whole, I mean, to give a little bit of history without getting too deep into it, but that whole lot owners association was an amalgamation of 14 different developers that developed separate sections of it and then combined all the land and the roads into one association to maintain the roads. There were certain sections that were never became part of the association and are not under any of the covenants or lot owners restrictions. And that's one of them.
And I understand from speaking with the proponent that his neighbors are fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
There's no concerns in that area about what's being proposed that you're aware of or like that you could foresee? He could have already done this a month ago?
He could have done this a month ago, and I don't think anybody would have known. I mean, how far does your sign carry from your sawmill? He's got about 60 acres there, which gives him, you know, the way to site a good buffer around.
And currently he's back Salmon Bay.
Yeah, he's back Salmon Bay and amongst all kinds of, it's another lot owners association. He has neighbors all around him, and there's never been a complaint about the noise there. So.
And it has a sawmill operation there already?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's a portable sawmill, so he's not always going to be in one spot. So, you know, I'm not sure how the zoning ends up being where it's not going to be a fully sited 100% of the time sawmill on the area, because he can hook it to a trailer and take it to somebody's property to do sawmilling. So.
Okay, but this the change will allow.
Yeah.
I don't even know the last two words. Livestock operations. So, first bullet, fowl and rabbits. So you have noted roosters requiring a minimum of 1 acre in a development permit, meaning that, and that was proposed so that everyone that's allowed to have 5 chickens, regardless of where they live, that would restrict roosters out of the more of areas where household livestock is not permitted. But we've heard from people who want to simply have roosters as part of their 5. No restriction on the number of roosters. If they are in household livestock, anything else you want to add to that?
Yeah, well, just so for absolute clarity, so the current 2009 document that's in effect now doesn't make any allowance for small livestock. There's two categories. There's commercial livestock or intensive livestock, and there's household livestock. Households up to 10 animal units of whatever kind, chickens, cows, whatever, and it's limited in certain places, and you need to have a development permit. So the current rules, technically, if you're having livestock, you need a development permit. New draft attempted to make that a little easier by creating this new wide exemption everywhere, all zones have up to 5 fowl and rabbits. We didn't include roosters in those 5, so you would still, roosters would fall under that household livestock as they do today and need a development permit. But as you mentioned, we heard a lot about that. So we can change that, and we can change the numbers.
So the discussion is yours, Council. Councilor Charlton.
I've heard a lot of comments about, you know, concerns about food security and things like that. So I'm wondering, realizing that you couldn't have, you know, chickens here, there, and everywhere before, and now it's allowing for 5. But I recently just discovered that in the urban areas of HRM, you can have 10. And this was a new change. That's quite recent, if I'm correct. So I'm just wondering if there's consensus that not a lot. Now I know that they're not allowed roosters in those urban areas or any other livestock. So I'm sort of wondering if maybe in our urban areas if that could be maybe similar. That's just one point I have about that. And the other one is not the urban areas, but as far as the roosters go, I know that you have to have the acre for the rooster, but I feel like, in my opinion, the development permit is unnecessary. If folks have the 1 acre, you know, they can have one horse, or if they have 2 acres, they can have one horse and 25 chickens. If they don't have to get a permit for those animals, why are we putting a permit on the rooster?
They do need to get a permit.
They do?
Yeah, that would be household livestock.
Yeah.
Okay. I misunderstood that.
Yeah.
Is that new, or what's that?
That's existing in 2009 and hasn't changed in this draft.
But to Councillor Charlton's point, why do we list rooster separate if you can have household livestock? Like, if you're legally allowed to have household livestock with a permit and 1 acre,
yeah,
then you can have 25 chickens. So why couldn't you have 24 chickens and 1 rooster? Like, it seems like we're saying the rooster needs the development permit.
The rooster,
like,
needs the 1 acre. If you have the 1 acre and you're a household livestock, you can have 25 chickens, or 25 roosters if you want. It just is under the blanket, you're allowed to have 5 chickens.
Right.
There's no lot size. So roosters, I guess, would tend to be because most of them, I know it was commented that not all roosters crow, but I'd say the majority of them probably do. I guess in your higher density urban areas, smaller lot sizes, they can be more problematic with the neighborhood. So, I guess that's kind of the rationale for bumping that up to consider roosters requiring the 1 acre of land.
Do they have to have their own separate acre? No.
They
don't need. You could have 24 chickens and a rooster.
If you have a rooster, you're considered household livestock.
Right.
And if you are household livestock, you need to have
1 acre
and you need to get a permit. And
so
that household livestock could be a rooster and 24 chickens.
Right.
It could
okay.
be a horse and a rooster. It could be.
Right.
Yeah. But you also need to be permitted for household livestock.
Councillor Gidney.
I had a comment about meat hens. And if they were raising meat hens, usually. Has been any thought of that, like something that we could work into the weekends?
So, yeah, if you were raising, again, if you're doing 4 or 5 of them, they would just fall under this blanket. You know, whether they're meat or egg hens,
right,
they would fall under blanket or not, depending on how many you had. There is a provision in there against slaughtering them on your property as a small livestock.
It goes to 5.
And then if you're more than that, you're either household livestock or you're commercial livestock, depending on how many you have.
Yes.
Councillor Brown.
I kind of share some of the concerns that Maddie's had about the number being 5. That, with food security now, if you're a family of 4 or 5 people, 5 fowl is not going to give you a lot to do with your food security. You know, if you're raising them for meat, like Councillor Gidney has said, 5 is, by the time you raise them, it's not going to keep the wolf away from the door. So maybe we should look at raising it to 10, like HRM has done, to give people enough of a food source to keep them going, or to actually help them, but maybe not necessarily in every zone, because I don't know if downtown Liverpool is appropriate for 10 chickens or not.
I know what she's going to say, downtown Halifax is Council Charlton.
Yes, I was going to say that. Because I was shocked when I found out that you could do that in downtown Halifax.
Yep, fair point.
I did not expect that. And then something else that's been brought to my attention is with meat hens. If you get 10, you'd be lucky to keep 5 of them. And so you're going to lose a couple. Like, they don't, some of them die, so.
No, they don't.
Well,
I raised 72 one time.
I'm not raised any, but that's what I'm told.
Councillor Merrill.
I would rather see cooking as well. We
two rabbits, well, you're over your limit, so I think dogs is. So do we want to go with the 10 similar to HRM for a blanket?
That's if you don't have the 1 acre, right?
Right.
Yeah, you can certainly have more if you call yourself out to a lot of dog, you're in a zone that'll have it.
Right. So 10?
Yeah, yeah.
Next bullet's free range.
They don't roosters.
Yeah, because that's kind of a separate, so we're back to, I guess, the roosters and the 1 acre. Under this, the same section, fowl, rabbit.
So what's council's opinion? Deputy Mayor Muse?
I'd say over an acre, but I really don't think we need a development permit to get a rooster.
But you need a development permit for a household livestock.
Yeah.
Right? Any household livestock.
Yeah, but this is just saying that you gotta do development permit just for a rooster, isn't it?
Yes, that's for the rooster, I guess. That enables us to say, yes, you comply with the bylaw, you've got 1 acre. If they don't have to issue a permit, you've got no way of identifying whether a person has an acre or not. So I guess that's, by bumping it up and requiring a permit, that's a trigger for us to say, okay, yes, either you've got the 1 acre or you don't.
Chances are they're not gonna go out and just get one rooster either. They don't have anything.
It's kinda hard when you get the little chicks to tell what sex they are. So, you know, they get 25 chickens and they're little, good chance it's gonna be more than one rooster. I just find that reading it there, you got to have a rooster, you gotta get a permit.
25 chickens require a permit.
Permit, I know, but that, this is saying a rooster.
Our residents are reading it like you probably have to have a permit for the rooster.
That's right.
So I think if we could change the language to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, just.
That would be good.
Could you just say that roosters are permitted as part of the fowl and rabbits or something?
Well,
yeah, I know.
If we just make it clear that if you have a rooster, then you're considered a household livestock operation. And the wording already says if you're a household livestock operation, you need a permit. So we don't have to tell them twice that you need a permit, once for a household operation and once for the rooster, because they think that the rooster itself needs the permit, but any household livestock operation needs the permit. If we could clean the language up, maybe.
Councilor Fancy, you want to add into this?
Sorry. I think it's more than that. Somebody who has a small little place and it's less than an acre, and they are trying to raise some eggs, and they have, and one thing, the other thing that's brought up is the rooster is a protector for also too. Weasels and all kinds of varmints that come around. So that was also too brought forward to in the discussions. That if you had a rooster, then you're only allowed 4 chickens. And if you're less than an acre, so somebody who's trying to do to raise some either eggs or birds to kill off eventually, they're limited. When they have that rooster, they only have 4 other birds, and I think that's a limiting factor too. And that people don't like that because some places they need this for, as we saw from 2019. Food security is an issue, so they may not have that acre. So all of a sudden, we just limited them to what they can have.
But
so I think we need to take that, maybe take the rooster end of it out.
So just for clarity, so you're saying you want to allow the roosters in that total count?
Yes.
In the total count of 10.
So they could have 10 roosters.
That's it, Charlton.
All right. So I'm just wondering, need the 1 acre for a rooster, but then it was just stated that you could then have 25 roosters on the 1 acre.
Right.
But to Jack's comment, if you have less than an acre, why can't you have a rooster? That contradicts, in my opinion. I mean, unless I'm misunderstanding something, but do think people have more strict expectations if you live in a high density urban area like myself. But then there are all these concerns about food security, so I just want to make sure that we're not missing the mark on that, and I guess we're being reasonable, because we see the cost of groceries, they're going to continue to rise and rise and rise, and we have one of the highest poverty rates in Nova Scotia as it is. So I just look at, I mean, we have like our community garden, there's always these initiatives of trying to get children to learn where their food sources come from and things like that, so I just don't want to miss the mark on this, and I can't speak from experience with this stuff myself because I don't have it. I'd like to learn, but there, you know, that was the number one concern that came out. These hobby farms are growing, they're becoming more popular. So I just want to make sure that we're in tune with being reasonable.
So we have about two different thought ways right now open. We have the one that says you should have less than an acre land to have household livestock. Because that's what you've just said, that if you don't have an acre of land, you should be able to have whatever for food security. Presently, we're saying 10 fowl anywhere, but if you live in certain areas, then you can't have roosters in there. So is it the question of the 1 acre for household livestock? Is that the question? And that it should be wherever people want to have it, like if they want an acre, if they have an acre of land in Liverpool, then you should be able to have household livestock.
Yeah, I don't think that was in my understanding of the conversation. That's not really the question. I guess what the minimum of an acre is currently what's required now. I guess as far as food security and essentially relaxing the regulations, the allowance for fowl and rabbit is helping that. We're opening things up more to allow more people to have fowl and rabbit within any area. So I think that's going to address that. I don't encourage this, the consideration of household livestock operations being 25 chickens or whatever that in under an acre. I think you require a minimum lot size. I know there's been a lot of discussion around the science doesn't say you can't have the X number of chickens on a lot, but you have to look at it from the perspective of the neighbors, that although you can raise 25 chickens within a smaller area of land, how is that impacting surrounding residential areas? So we have, through policy for many, many years, established that potential land conflicts, that an acre is a reasonable number as far as lot size to try to offset some of those potential conflicts. So
does council agree with that point, that you should have an acre of land and be zoned for household livestock if you wish to have household livestock?
Yes.
And currently you can have them anywhere except the urban serviced areas and have household livestock. And yours, that would be, that includes all of Milton, Brooklyn, and Liverpool now.
They're not allowed in the...
In the resort.
The lakeshore.
And the lakeshore.
No, that's right.
Right.
There's certain zones.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
But basically,
we don't want a bunch of cattle near the lakes and polluting the water.
But like household livestock,
mm-hmm.
1 acre of land. Is that, do council agree that you should have 1 acre of land,
yes,
for every animal unit defined according to the chart?
Yep.
Councillor Charlton.
I'm just wondering, and I guess just clarifying to Mike's comment. My comment was more intended, I'm not trying to say that we should be wide open in like an urban area, but I'm wondering if some of these provisions, if the food security concerns that people have, are we being too strict in rural? So I guess that's kind of goes back to what I was trying to say with the rooster. If someone has half an acre and they have a rooster, if they're in a rural area where they're not in a high density zone.
Yeah, so I think to put it in the terms of this document, the rooster a household livestock use, or is it falling under this 10 fowl?
Yeah.
Is a rooster a 10 fowl, or is it a household livestock?
Yeah, that's the question.
That's the kind of fundamental.
I think it's a 10 fowl.
I would argue that if you're, even if you're out in the country, if you're on a half an acre, you're in a higher density area. Chances are that it's been subdivided and your neighbors are close. So the issue is not about whether it's rural or urban. It's about the density of the development and the lot owners and how you get along with your neighbors by having a rooster. And if you put a rooster every half acre, that's a lot of noise. It's a lot of potential conflict. I think that's my feeling is why I'm in favor of keeping it to an acre so that they've got less conflict.
So are we in agreement, 1 acre for household livestock, and a rooster is considered household livestock?
Yep.
Yes.
See, nod.
Yeah.
Yes, so that's the majority of nods.
Mm-hmm. With the 10 fowl, you're not going to eat the rooster. You eat your chicken, so you're going to raise meat hens, you're not going to eat the rooster.
But they protect them.
That's right.
They protect them.
But if you're in a smaller area, there's going to be less things going on. You have a better control.
What's danger for that chicken if you're in an urban area, right, compared to a rural area, right? If you're over town here and you've got 10 chickens, it's going to attack those chickens.
Right, exactly.
You don't really need a rooster. And a rooster also can be very vicious, too.
Yes, oh, yeah.
Right, so you got to take that into effect if you're 30 feet from your neighbor's property, right? He comes over and nails your kid. And they will do that.
Yeah, I've seen it. So are we all right with an acre land, household livestock? Roosters are considered household livestock. They're not allowed in the now 10 fowl that anyone can have anywhere. Yes.
And the fowl and rabbits is 10 in total?
Right.
Okay.
So,
is a turkey there in
that? Yeah.
I think it's
turkey's a fowl.
Yeah.
Turkeys, guinea hens.
So don't turkeys potentially have the same risks as what was said of a rooster?
No.
Well, turkeys what?
Have the same, like Carl's saying that a rooster could be vicious, but a turkey. It's just a question. I don't think so.
I've never had a vicious turkey, but.
We have had some complaints about vicious turkeys. Yeah. On vehicles.
Geese is another one, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
But that's why you keep them on your own property.
Right.
So we are minimum 1 acre for household livestock. Household livestock is only allowed in the proposed zones. Anyone in Queens County, regardless of their zone, can keep 10 fowl. And fowl can be guinea hens, meat birds, chickens, just not a crow and rooster. We okay with that?
Yes.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay. Free range animals.
Yeah, so that's one. I think there's a lot of comments about that on enclosures and stuff. The current draft says shall be kept within an enclosure and some shall not be permitted to run at large. That wasn't intended to mean that you had to build a coop or something for them, just that they had to be.
I certainly think that was the perception on the majority of comments that we received, that the
that they had to be kept in essentially a coop. But really, that's intended, that we don't want the animals leaving subject property. So if your property is fenced, then they're not able to stray onto your neighbor's property, then that was intended.
So do we need to reword that to say livestock animals must be confined to your property? Would that work? Must be confined to your property. Because we do, to your land.
Contained within your property.
Yeah. Because we do receive complaints from neighbors of people with fowl who do not appreciate their fowl in their own yard. Councilor Charlton?
Yeah, I've heard that before as well. I think most of the residents' comments were that they thought that they would have to be in an enclosure because everyone talked about, you know, guinea hens cleaning up ticks and they thought they couldn't roam their property anymore. And then I had someone reach out to me and say that they have guinea hens go between their property and their neighbor's property, like they share them. And I said, well, that's an agreement with your neighbor. So
the neighbor's not going
to
complain.
No, because the neighbor has asked for them to go between their, you know, adjacent properties. So I think if we could reword that for easier reading, it would be better.
Councilor Romero?
I agree. It would be better for easier reading because I've had one in my district already as well. If they're venturing over to the next door neighbors and tearing up flowers. And, oh, yeah. That is much better reading.
And anybody who's got fowl on their property, if they don't have some sort of a coop, they're not going to have fowl for long because the raccoons are going to eat really well.
So basically, keep your livestock on your own property.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other concern listed, no household livestock in the general residential RG zone, which is currently an R2 zone. So is that referring to the Milton area?
Yeah,
the pop of Milton?
So the current 2009 bylaw does actually permit household livestock in the R2 zone. We've changed that zone to the RG zone. The residential general is the same zone, basically. But in doing so, left out household livestock. Honestly, can't recall if that was deliberate or not.
Yeah. I don't know whether it was around that being classified as your urban service area, which limited, but yeah, so it the current proposed documents to address those in, I guess, areas of Milton and Brooklyn primarily that are currently zoned as general residential R2.
Where's Liverpool out here?
Yes, yeah, on the peripheries of off George Street. So the current draft document does not fully include household livestock in those areas. So we have heard several comments from members of the public around that as well, but the drafts don't accommodate that. So can that be changed back? Certainly it can. For some direction. Parts of Milton and Brooklyn, there are some large lots that could easily accommodate. There are smaller lots in those areas as well. But there certainly is potential to include that in the RG zone.
And I've never heard a complaint from anyone in the R2 zone complaining of their neighbor's household livestock, which they're currently allowed to have. Anyone else? That would be like
Milton.
Milton, you haven't.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Pardon?
There must have been some complaints on Milton.
Yeah.
About
definitely
people with household livestock? Legal? No, but it's not legal household livestock. But people who are legally allowed to have household livestock in the current R2 zone. Have we ever heard complaints from those who are currently legally allowed to have livestock?
No, not that I recall.
No.
There might have been some.
Right. So if you live currently currently in an R2 zone, you could legally have household livestock if you have an acre.
Mm-hmm.
So since that R2 zone is now just being called an RG zone, wouldn't it just make sense to continue that right? Does anyone object to that?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but Lee, you could be in that zone, have less than an acre, and have a horse. Is that correct? Prior?
Only if the grandfather.
Yes, grandfather. Okay, I'm pumped off grandfather.
But in the old, it was Brooklyn in the old Brooklyn bylaw, you used to be able to have, wasn't it 3 horses per acre or something?
Prior to 2009?
Yeah.
But, is that allowed now? Can you have a horse?
Not in new operations, no.
I'm sorry?
No.
No, but if it's grandfathered in, you can, is that right?
Oh, yes, if that just pre-existed the bylaws, it was.
Yes.
That's right, yes, okay.
Pre-existing legal operations?
If it was illegal.
Yeah.
At the time, the new bylaws don't make that legal.
So for example, they've had a horse for 30 years, not the same horse, obviously, but different horses over the years, so they still, and that horse dies, they get another one and they move on, is that correct?
As long as they don't cease that operation for.
6 months.
12, 6 or 12.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is it 6 or 12?
Extended to 12, I believe.
I think, yeah, I think it was 6, and we extended that.
To 1 year? So household livestock will be placed back in the RG zone as a legal use if you have an acre land. And there are several, I think, large pieces in Milton that could, as an example. Was there anything else the council wanted to talk about under household livestock? Councilor Charlton.
Just wondering, I recall a lady being concerned about not being able to have household livestock in the Hamlet zone, but Mike, I think you clarified that. And are they
permitted?
Both allowed in the Hamlet core and Hamlet commercial? Just want to clarify that. This whole thing with food security, do we have any opportunities, I guess, to reach out to someone from an agriculture point or someone specializing in like food security to see if there's anything else that maybe we may be missing for future use or future consideration? I know that these are living documents and they can amend from time to time, but I know a lot of people in this community are afraid about food security, and I don't have a lot of experience with that, so again, it just goes back to not missing the mark in that regard.
Well,
so, Mike, I have heard from the Department of Agriculture. I got shuffled on to a third person, and they do not have specific regulations nor policies, but they are going to come back with their recommendations per acre, which is what they've always done. So the answer to that is we're waiting on that, Councillor Charlton, on recommendations from the department, as well as these past documents, the current documents that we have, 2009, they were flushed through Department of Agriculture, and Department of Agriculture had approved what was in the current. So Department of Agriculture back in 2009 checkmarked, because these documents go through all the government agencies, so they did checkmark the ones, but they will review this section again. The person has not got back to me yet, because I specifically said to her, this is what we're proposing, 1 acre of land, here's the animal units. We need comments from Department of Agriculture, and they haven't come back yet.
Yeah, and I think certainly the comments from Department of Agriculture, they'll comment on what lot size is reasonable, raise X number of animals. they won't probably potentially look at, I guess, other impacts on the surrounding area as well, that location of the files or whatever that may impact on. So our numbers not necessarily flat, but Department of Agriculture says an adequate plot size due to raise a particular number of animals. Beyond that scope as well.
So is there anyone else that we?
So I recently met with an analyst from the Provincial Federation of Agriculture, their policy analyst. It wasn't specific about this project, but it was about agricultural planning in Nova Scotia. And yeah, they're thinking about this kind of stuff a lot, the security and protecting our agriculture. And when coming out of that meeting, the biggest for them, or at least from this one policy analyst, is protecting agricultural land, which in Queens there's terrible. Not to say there's not agriculture, but there's very little high quality agricultural land that you would deem as a large agricultural area. So they want to see things like not developing that land. So not such an issue here. These documents as we have them, we've got this new provision for 10 fowl, there's the household livestock, the drafts make it easier to do farmers markets. There's nothing that prohibits things like gardening or having a garden or crops. Agricultural uses are pretty broadly permitted, like anything related to larger agricultural cropping and that kind of thing. I don't know if there's much else from a regulatory perspective that you do to improve,
right.
You might have programs or something like that, but.
Yeah, I'm just asking, is that those were a few comments that I received that people felt like, the agricultural folks weren't connected with. And I know that there were different stakeholder groups and things like that. And quite often, people don't know about these until things like, things go viral on social media and such, but. I just had concerns about that.
Councillor Merrill and then Councillor Brown.
Will these changes require another public hearing?
Yes.
Yes, these will be substantive.
Because they'll be substantive changes.
Okay. Couple of concerns that people brought up to me was one was about commercial agriculture, and I guess in HRM and a few other places, somebody planted a vegetable garden in their backyard and put a stand in their front yard to sell some excess, and they were shut down because they were considered commercial because they were selling.
It's helpful.
That's actually a good point.
Yeah.
Actually, do you have a specific provision? 7.7, farm, fish, and forest stalls. Nothing in this bylaw shall prevent the direct sale of fish or other seafood, farm products, blah, 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 blah. From a small structure at the end of your lot, basically.
Okay, that's good. And the other concern was one of the things we had was that you had to have lawns or flowers in your front yard, and people were wondering if it's possible to grow vegetables, put a vegetable garden in their front yard.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, no, there's nothing in this bylaw that would prohibit that.
No, that confusion came from one little line in there that says something about a manicured front lawn. And I explained that to a person who's concerned, and I said it simply means when you go and build your house and plow all your trees down, you can't keep living in the gravel pit. You have to do something on your yardscape. So if you can grow rose bushes and flowers, you can certainly grow blueberry bushes and beans in your front yard. But that was another big fallacy that was running amok on social media. Somewhere, I think it was just an isolated sentence somewhere, noting about front yard and a manicured, had the word manicured.
Yeah, all
But I said a garden is manicured.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think it's in any one of the particular zones, I think it was in one of the general
statements.
The general sections on site, like around the setbacks and things like that.
Were there any other issues on related to the proposed document that you wanted to bring forward? Councilor Charlton.
Just in regards to shipping containers, that was brought up about how it's, I think the way it reads might be, it says about being able to use it as like an add-on, but you can't, it's interpreted that you can't use it on its own, but I, from my understanding, conversations with you before, is that it just has to meet the building code, and then it technically is no longer considered a shipping container and could be someone's like tiny home, or am I misunderstanding?
And certainly I've had numerous discussions with building officials around this as well. If somebody takes a shipping container as a base, remanufactures that to meet code for a dwelling, it's brought on site like any other manufactured home. I don't, it's no longer a shipping container. It's a dwelling at that stage. I have to treat it as such. Essentially, that's a shipping container as the base, but to go through all the work of the engineer, the code standards, and it's no longer shipping container.
Right, so could we clarify how that reads? Because people just assume that they can't turn a shipping container into a home. I mean, of course you have to meet the building code, that's to be expected.
But I would think it would have to be pre-manufactured off-site to bring home. If somebody just pops a shipping container on property. I don't know.
And just, you see a lot of them being renovated, like people gutting them and things like that, and so.
Sounds more like a building inspector, building
right.
code regulation, as opposed to a planning regulation.
Right. Yeah, I just, the concern from residents, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, is the way that it reads, people think they can't turn one into a home, but it just has to meet the building code, so that's why I'm wondering if it could just, there'd be some clarification around that.
But that becomes the interpretation of the building inspector, not the planning regulations.
Or could we put a note to reference the building code? I don't know. I'm just trying to put out fires of concerns.
And I spoke to our building inspector about that, and same thing. If you take a shipping container, take it to building code to make it to fit the code as a home, it's no longer a shipping container. A shipping container is a big tin box that you can't live in, but if you bring it to code, to building code, then it is a home and a dwelling, not a shipping container.
And I think certainly in my discussions, it is possible. It's
expensive.
A lot of people don't realize to bring something like that,
right.
It's not intended for habitation up to building code standards for a dwelling.
Keep rebuilt up.
It's highly cost prohibitive.
I think we could fix that language though.
I've had a lot of questions, even since 2009 regarding shipping containers for homes. No one has ever followed through with it because of the cost.
But on saying that, we have a company at the Mersey place now building containers for homes. So how long before one of those come around here?
There's already one here.
Pardon?
There's one here in Milton. Isn't that considered?
They're not shipping containers.
No, that's Jonathan Boyle's not.
But they are building shipping containers
now.
At Bowler's now.
But if somebody's pre-manufacturing, manufacturing those, bringing them from CCAN to a dwelling brought on site, then as long as they meet the National Building Code standards for a manufactured home, then we would treat them as such.
I think that's what really just needs to be noted, exactly what you just said, because people just, I mean, if you take a shipping container and completely gut it, say it's me, and I need building code, and someone, Vicky says to me, well, all of your household's made it, oh, it's a shipping container, right, people just, it's still a shipping container to people, and the concerns I've got back, some of the feedback for these documents, is it's hard for the average Jane, Joe, whoever, to read. So if we can just simplify some of those concerns, I think it would help cut down on calls to Wendy and like yourself, because people just see right there, I just have to meet the building code, I can do it, it's not that I can't. Am I?
And I think it's just the, sometimes it's just the, how it looks, because you say you can't do it. That's a different aspect than to say you can do it, but once they look into it, they can. At least they can say they can.
I think a lot of people watch American TV DIY shows where they have areas that have no building codes, no bylaws, no inspectors, no rules of any sort, and they can stick anything in and call it a home for cheap, and people see this as an option, but it doesn't work.
Any other?
I have I've been getting more calls and people tell me that they won't travel along the number 3 highway anymore because we're putting condos and Airbnbs right along the water. I really don't see in this new planning strategy how it's going to change people building along the water. Because if you got the elevation still there, people, and it's happened, people are just going to keep filling and filling and filling and bring it up to that level. And then they're allowed to put a building right on the water. And I just have a big problem with that.
Do you want to see a definite setback always, regardless of elevation?
We have 50 feet, make it 100 or 80 or something, and say you cannot go any closer than that.
Regardless of elevation.
Regardless of elevation and how much money you have.
Or certain lot size.
Well, you have to have certain lot size now to build.
It's an existing lot, though.
Unless it's a pre-existing lot.
So yeah, the current draft has the minimum vertical elevation and has the horizontal elevation. Use the horizontal one if you can prove that it's not an eroding coast, basically. You know, if you're on, because that's meant for erosion, it's not less for. I will say with the coastal stuff, I guess, is that the provincial Coastal Act regulations, probably going to be in place. You know, so that's another layer that's coming in place.
Whether ours will be as stringent or less stringent, I guess we don't know exactly what's.
Well.
We're kind of coming out ahead of the coastal protection regulations.
From being at the meetings and kind of looking at what's happening in these ones.
So are we, if I may, Chairperson, are you asking for no exemptions for anybody, or are you asking for 80 or 100 feet with an exemption?
No, I'm saying 80 to 100 feet, and that, well, whatever, if we do 80 feet or 100 feet, and that's it, you can't be any closer to the high water mark.
No exemptions?
No exemptions.
So I guess that's the question for council. Is council agreeable to go back 80 or 100 feet?
With no exemptions.
With no exemptions.
So regardless if you're living on a stone cliff, every home is going to have to, every building is now going to have to be 100 feet back off the shore. So we're going to make a lot of lots unbuildable.
Yeah, I guess the variance was intended to address the varying coastline that we have, but yeah, you're on a granite-based shoreline that's got zero potential or little potential for erosion, little issues with the climate change. I guess that's the intent of allowing some flexibility in the regulations as opposed to having a hard and fast certainly the intent.
Well, if that person has to do that study too, not just.
But I know, but it's not gonna stop what's happening now in my district. You know, people building right on the ocean, and I don't know how they're getting away with what they're doing. They get their little ways, I guess, but it's not helping, and I mean, and I don't blame the people for being mayors. I mean, I couldn't afford to go down there and do that, so they just haul fill and fill and fill and to make sure that the elevation's high enough and it's gonna wash out. I mean, it, you know, the way I'm looking at it, if we make it, you're 80 feet back or 100 feet back, but we had 50 before, you know, that's far enough back, because the shore is going all the time. You know, down at Hunts Point especially, the guy right down at the end of the Hunts Point Beach, that's washing away every year, you know. And I just think it's not right to have little tricks to get around it. If we had it that you couldn't do it within 80 feet or 100 feet, whatever it is, everybody's on the equal ground.
You mean that when you say the end of Hunts Point Beach, you mean like the new big building?
No, on the other end. Okay. You can see it washing, the trees that fell in the ocean in the last couple of storms. No. It's washing away.
Supersede our documents, will it not?
It is more stringent.
Whatever is the most stringent, yeah.
Right. And so, as far as there be certain areas that wouldn't have the risk of erosion like others, so wasn't the intent of this put in there because that made sense, like it should be adaptable in that sense?
That's providing that flexibility for those lots that are.
The deputy mayor's point is, if you've got enough money, you can bring armor rock, build up your property, and then get the study done to show you're not susceptible because you've got a big armor rock wall. So if you've got enough money, you can build anywhere.
And the coastal protection regulations are expected to have rules about coastal armoring, but I'm not sure what they're going to be.
The proposed drafts say there will be no armoring on lands belonging to the province.
That's what all it says.
So currently, you can go to DNR and get permission to armor rock on their land. And they're going to say no more. No more on our land. But when I did attend one of those meetings, and I sort of expressed the same opinion as Deputy Mayor Muse, if you've got the money, you're going to be able to build anyway. Because even within the province, if, you know, because they're going to have even greater height elevations, and they're going to have that big zone dependent upon where you live in the province. And my question was, is it the natural lay of the land, or is it after you've spent a big pocket of money to build it all up and rock it all in, and then bring your soil people in and test it? Because, you know, that's what, you know, and you get, you know, and someone said back to me, well, that's just the way it is. Some people have a lot of money, and if they can bring their land up to the standard that we want and it's not going to be eroded, then that's the way it is. And if you don't have the money to bring the land up to the standard that we're going to want, then you won't be building. And sadly, that's the way the world works, unless we want to work differently. So if you wish, and a lot of the problem along here is that these were undersized, some of these little spots, they were undersized lots which existed prior to 2009, which is the first adoption of the documents. And the documents state that any lots that are undersized prior to 2009, if they can prove that they can get the on-site system and the whatevers, then they get to build on them.
Setback.
And the setbacks.
We need to just.
Sorry.
Yeah.
But I think it goes along with what's being said here, is that if they're gonna go along by the water and build it up to ground and things, and then it should not pass the inspection. It could be washed away. If they put big rocks in there, they got millionaires and put the big rocks in, prove it. I don't think there's anything much we can say about that. But they have made it up to a standard. But if they're gonna just build it with ground and things, where as Kevin says, and the trees wash away and everything else eventually gonna wash away, they just can't pass.
And I'm not.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm not talking about houses that's been there.
Right.
But we're getting onto that. I'm talking about new places that's coming up.
Yeah.
People are just building right on the ocean, and then it should be a setback. You know.
There is a setback.
100.
There's the closest right now that you can go under the current bylaw is 25 feet with the variance.
Right. But, and that's what I'm saying, but it should be 80 feet. And then have the variance, you know, or something, just something different than what we have now, because in the new thing.
You mean like a proposed, like right now we're saying 100 feet back. So you're suggesting no greater than an 80 foot variance, what you're saying?
So she does 100 foot setback, and
right.
Then allows a 25% variance down to 80. 20% variance.
To go down to 25 feet.
To go down to 80, 20, 70 feet,
yeah.
What? To get down to 75 feet.
Yeah. Well, 20%. Yep, but that's what I think we should be. I mean,
what's council think about that? Right now, we're proposing a 100 foot setback.
No,
50. No, this is 100.
It's 100, but.
It's 100 on the coast. So the new documents are saying 100 on the coast, but if for some reason your lot doesn't allow that because of whatever lands are there, that you can come in closer if you can prove you've got the elevation.
You have the elevation, and that the coast is not erodible.
Right.
And you're subject to flooding, and you can reduce it as low as 25.
So we're saying reduce it as low as 75 feet?
Okay.
80 feet.
80 feet?
Yeah. Have it 100, and then with a variance, or, you know, if you got the elevation, you can do 80.
I kind of feel that where we had 50 to 25, so you were allowed a 50% variance. If we went with a 50% variance now, and you went from 100 down to no more than 50, would be even fairer.
Yeah,
what
that's
do you
true.
Think?
But also, too, it's not 100 feet from the ordinary high water mark under the proposed bylaw.
Push it back further. And the top of the bank's defined as where the vegetation starts?
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, but.
Yeah. It's different everywhere.
Yeah, that's,
yeah.
We're going to have a problem with
right.
that too when that comes into
defining
play.
Defining that lot.
Yeah, because
well,
most of the places that are doing, that are, we're going
to
have problems with, and we have problems with now, there is no vegetation. They're building right on the rocks, you know.
So what do we think about a 100-foot setback with up to a 50% variance, which would take you to 50 feet with the height elevation?
That's all we have now.
No, now we have 50 feet with the ability to go to 25.
With the variance.
I feel like you're losing half of us.
Yeah, but still got the 50 feet, and then you can put something there. You don't need a...
But right now, if you meet, under the current bylaw, if you met the 50-foot setback, you
yeah.
have to meet an elevation.
Yeah, there's no height elevation.
It's only when you wanted to reduce it to 25 feet, you had to be 8 feet in elevation above the ordinary high water mark.
I don't think 50 is enough. I think it should be 80. Maybe.
How many properties would be unable to sell because of this? Like, is there lots that would be that small enough that you couldn't build on?
There's newly subdivided lots even that are currently for sale that are subject to like the elevation, like 80% of these newly created lots that are under that elevation requirement.
But they won't be able to build on?
They would have to go through this.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
figure what the elevation is.
Cut the elevation.
Elevation, yeah, you can't reduce the elevation.
It's just the horizontal setback, you're very. Or put them on posts or different construction.
You just put a basement in it.
Make them put that hook in.
Probably what it is.
What's happening down there?
House are fancy. I think they're making room for something.
Yeah, so if we went with what the mayor said, just say this now, because what Kevin said is very true too. But if we're saying that people have bought lands thinking that they can get within 50 feet, if we're saying that you've got to be the 100 feet, then now you're gonna, you know, you go to a variance to 50 feet, the 50 feet still stays in place. It's just they can't get down to 25.
Right.
So we're actually holding them to a spot, but they can't get to the variance of where they want to be. So we'd still hold that 50 foot no matter what. And then, so it may not hurt people who have bought with that intention of that 50 foot.
It will, because we're changing from the ordinary high water mark to the top of the bank.
Right.
You could have to be top of the bank, you could still have to be, and the elevation, you could have to be further back.
Yeah, at the top of the bank, maybe 50 feet from the ordinary high water mark.
So it's, so if we go up to at least the 50 feet, we get careful, we don't go too far that people have already purchased and put them into a bad situation. It's a tough one, because you don't want to create that, but you. So I think I'd be somewhat wrong with the 150. 100 foot setback to 50 variance.
So you're saying it'd be 50 feet from the coastal or the vegetation?
Yeah,
but this is even further back.
Which would be the closest they could get.
50 feet.
Otherwise, they've got to be 100, and you would have to grant a variance for them to get 50.
In 2009 documents, the ones currently in force, default is 50 feet away, and you can reduce that 25 feet from the ordinary high water mark with a study. The new draft, as it's written, default is 100 feet from the top of the bank, which is already further, in most cases, further back. You could have places where a top bank was the same as the ordinary high water mark. Most places is further back, and as it's drafted, you can reduce that to 25 feet from the top of bank.
With the elevation.
And yes, that's the other new thing, is that you have to meet that 2.5.
Or we're
that can't be reduced no matter what.
Yeah, so we're saying make it 50 feet, no closer to 50 feet.
The end of my bank now, 50 feet further down, is going to be measured from that point back, is that correct?
Yeah. So you, like, let's say you're the top of your bank is 50 feet from the ordinary high water mark.
Right.
You're still required to be 100 feet back from the top of the bank. You're going to be 150 feet from the ordinary high water mark. Under the new requirements.
Right.
But that would be only basically beach areas where your top of your bank is that far from high tide. That's beach area. And it doesn't hurt to be 150 feet back from the beach the way the beaches are going.
So, but isn't the province still keeping the mean high water mark?
Yeah.
They're not changing this. So who's going to overrule who? So is our, the way we have it, or is it they're going to go and say, well, the province says I only got to be from the mean high water mark?
Yeah.
It's the more stringent rule.
Okay.
We can't be less stringent.
Or if you are, the province
will, yeah, enforce it.
So I've had a few comments about people being concerned that they have existing land that they'll be able to do nothing with. And so that's kind of been thrown out. So then if we make it more strict, then that's more.
So there could still be situations with the current draft, and even more so if we increase the numbers, where there will be lots that become undeveloped. Because you can do the study to reduce the distance, but you might, if lots are small enough or close enough, even with the reduced distance, they'll be within a lot that's fully covered.
Right.
But, or you might have a lot of the, or below the 2.8 meter vertical setback. There's a potential for some lots to be undevelopable. Maybe that's okay.
And so to clarify that, Ian.
Yeah.
if we didn't have anything on this, I know we do, and I'm not saying we should take it out, I don't mean that, but we expect this to come in from the province. So would those lands likely still be not able to be developed, whether we put these provisions on or not, that will act that from the provincial one?
It's sounding like, and you know, all in draft, but it's sounding like the vertical elevation will be the same.
Okay.
What we're having. So that's gonna, yeah, that part's already, and the, what the province is sounding like they're gonna do is some sort of modeling of the coast that you're on. You get a qualified person, like a the same system they use the septic installers, but now you're a qualified person for coastal analysis. Run a little model that looks at the slope, material it is made of, spits out how erodible that is, and it spits out a number for how far back from the edge you have to be.
So, which is why we're being proposed with what we're being proposed with, essentially, is
yeah.
For some flexibility if you're on a coast that doesn't have the same kind of erosion as elsewhere, you know, flexibility.
Essentially, because that's what the report that we require for that variance.
Yeah, this was written to kind of deal with the fact that different areas are more erodible than others, but we don't have data on how. You know, if you're in PEI, they actually have rules for each piece of coast because they have long-term data sets that say, yeah, we're losing a foot a year here and 10 foot here, and they can actually, they have the data for that. We don't have that in Nova Scotia. So this is written, so taking your presumption of, yeah, you got to be far back, we're being cautious,
mm-hmm.
And if you're on a site that you think is not very erodible, do this study and tell us otherwise.
Those existing lots, wouldn't you still be allowed to use them, like non-conforming lots before 2009 still get built on? So any lots that are created today, that were created last or whatever, or last month, that were subdivided, wouldn't those be considered non-conforming lots? And you could make allowances up to get to the 50 and that's it?
Not necessarily. There's a broad provision in the document for undersized lots.
Undersized.
So if you don't meet the lot area or lot frontage requirements, and you're an existing lot, it'll be used for use in that zone. That's just area and frontage. That's broad everywhere. But you might, because of all these various setbacks, might have a situation where you can't meet any of the setbacks, even if your lot is existing.
Oh, because of a pond on it, or?
Yeah, because of a pond, because of the
right.
Minimum vertical elevation. And there is this mechanism to reduce it through the study, reduce the water course setback. And there is a provision in here for reducing minimum setbacks, you know, to reduce the front yard setback to, you know, to make space for a building. But you could, in certain situations, if a lot was really close to the coast or something and was small, you could see a situation where you'd reduce the shoreline buffer as much as possible, got the building sitting right on the front property line, and there's still not enough room, you know, on a small lot. It's possible.
So what happens to municipalities in that instance if we create rules like this that make properties valueless?
Nothing?
Nothing?
Not valueless. There's still a value.
Well, there'd still be a value for something.
Yeah. They sell to the next door.
Adjoining owner.
They put an RV on it.
Yeah.
Or chickens.
Chickens. All right, so we're at the, so what are we going to do?
Okay, so let me get to,
okay.
So right now, if I had the land elevation, I could build 25 feet with the variance. I can build 25 feet from the high water mark. The new rules, you're saying, I can, with a variance or whatever, I can only build 50 feet from the grass.
Right now it's 50 feet. 25. Oh, yeah, 25. Yeah.
With the reduction in the new rules, as proposed, 25 feet from the upper bank, so the vegetation, roughly. So even with the new rules, we've made it more strict.
But it's still built 25 feet.
25 and 25, but it's from the top of bank rather than from ordinary high water mark. If you want, yeah, and you can discuss making
50, if we could do 50.
Yes.
Say 50 feet from.
Right.
The vegetation. I think that would work.
Which Counselor Brown said is keeping with our current.
Yes.
Right now we're 50.5.
Right.
Right now we're 100, but you can do up to a 50% variance.
Right.
And from my understanding, the height requirement is not the height of the land, it's the height of your
bottom floor.
First floor.
The height is also changing too, because
yeah.
The current bylaw, it's 2.5 meters in elevation.
Yeah.
Under the new bylaw, it's 2.8 meters
yeah.
in elevation.
But if you can get within 50 feet and put your house up on pilings, you can gain the height that way.
Yeah.
Get up there.
If we went to 50 feet, I'd like it a problem.
Are you satisfied?
Yeah.
Yeah.
50 feet from the top of the bank?
Right.
Yes.
That's the closest you can go. There's no way to get around it, is it?
No. Not if you put that in the variance.
Yeah.
And
that's enough.
So there's no control on how much you can infill?
We don't really have the ability to
control that.
Yeah, okay.
So what does changing that do then? Does it do anything?
No.
Yeah. Pushing back 50.
Because if I want to infill back to the high watermark, back here.
You wouldn't have any vegetation there to go from.
What's vegetation?
Yeah, and the definition is not actually vegetation, it's to do with slope and everything, but it tends to.
So define top of the bank.
It's where the slope breaks from being a certain slope to another slope.
So the engineering term is angle of repose.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm familiar with a lot of land, especially up like Lockport area, some of Port Jolly. It's beach in front of it. And this is the beach. And then this is land. Then way back here, there's trees, like 300 feet away.
Yeah.
So the top of the bank is up here now?
Depending on where a surveyor...
That's weird.
That doesn't work. See, that's the thing. And I do have a piece of property that's being developed right now that doesn't...
That looks just like that.
So then do we need to put some kind of provision in the document to deal with that?
Define top of bank. Like,
yeah,
what at the top of bank?
We've been trying to figure that out.
Yeah.
What if there's no top?
Well, like
of
Councilor Hawk said,
yeah.
If I got a bunch of money, I can just fill right into the high water mark and then
and that's
I'm
your
back up there again.
If you can infill it to the high water mark and we can't control the infill, then why doesn't it just go from the high water mark,
yeah.
not the top of the bank, when half the time there's not even a top of the bank?
A lot of properties that have actual cliffs on them, you're never going to, you know, if you've got the 100 foot high cliff.
Mm. Right.
You're not infilling that, you know, there is.
No, but like in the case that Darlene just mentioned, so.
Could you have it so that if there is no top of bank?
Within
yeah.
a certain distance.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can make it so that if there's no top of bank within.
50.
Within a certain distance of the ordinary high water mark.
Yeah.
Right.
If you can infill and it doesn't matter, then I mean, I get what Councilor Deputy Mayor used. Is saying, but then if you can infill, then what does it really matter?
It's not even necessarily infill it too. You can armor rock
yeah.
on your own land.
So it's not, if we increase that, it doesn't change anything, does it? Or am I misunderstanding?
Can we determine that it's at the natural top of bank rather than an engineered top of bank?
Yeah.
Who enforces that though?
But if there isn't a natural top of bank.
Right.
It should be. I don't know why it wouldn't be.
Well, we'll leave that with you fellows to be able to
I think the thing is not all sites are suitable for infilling, and not everybody has the ability to infill either. Like, you're not going to... There are some people who have enough money and enough will to make anything happen. You're not going to get rid of all the situations. But
the problem I see is that if we make these lots so that the average person can't infill it and build it, then it's only going to be the people who can afford it that are going to buy those, and then they're going to infill it and build on it and block everybody's view. And that's where we're getting to the point out there where the Deputy Mayor Muse is talking about that people are building in what a lot of people think are inappropriate spots, and blocking.
So 50 feet.
So what is it? Top of bank, 50 feet. Nothing within 50 feet of the top of the bank. 100 feet back unless you do a request for variance, and the variance can only be granted no closer than 50 feet to top of bank. And if we run in some of those instances where people are going to want to build in behind beaches on beach grass and things, you know, I just think of, it's not even our county, but when you think of up in the campground up there, and it's at Lockport.
You're going to use 50 feet from the top of the bank, or if there's no top of the bank, then you use the high water to give you some kind of parameter of work.
Yeah, or certain distance, there's a bit of the kind of detail.
So when they ask for a variance, does that always come to council? Not on this situation, does it? Okay.
Those ones, they have to hire a qualified person to do that variance.
Okay.
And that report, as long as it meets all the four criteria, then
they come to council if they want greater than the variance.
We shouldn't call this a variance. This is
it's a reduction.
Yeah.
Right. It was a variance under the current bylaw, but it was a different kind of variance.
Okay.
Yeah.
But under the proposed one, it's a reduction.
Okay. Reduction.
Mike supplied over there.
No, just taking it all.
So is that all of it?
So what's happening?
So now Ann and Mike will go away, make the changes, make the edits, and then we'll schedule one more public hearing to go through the documents one final time, and if that's fine, then we go to second reading.
I did have the question, Mike, that I raised about the accessory dwellings. And Ian, in our present documents, it says they shall not be located within the required front yard of a lot, which is 25 feet for accessory dwellings.
Depends on the zone.
Yeah, well, anyway, that's what present.
Dwellings or accessory buildings?
I mean, accessory buildings shall not be located within the required front yard of a lot, which is 25 feet in the R5 and R6. But in the proposed new hamlet and urban serviced, it simply says accessory dwellings shall not be located in the front yard. With the exception of garages, which meant if I had a 100-foot driveway, I couldn't put an accessory building in my front yard. So shouldn't have we kept the 25 feet as a required front yard space?
I think that was a specific discussion at PAC, and that was a specific direction to not allow them in the front yard and coming out of the PAC.
Even if they have a 100-foot driveway?
Like out in David's zone, that you would consider your front yard as like your lake. I remember conversations about that, and I think we changed some things around that. So would it be the same?
Yeah, so accessory dwellings.
Buildings.
Yeah, so the discussion you're thinking of, we did talk about accessory dwellings, and there was a concern that it was in the lakes that your rear yard is really what we call it, you know, your between your cottage and the lake or your house and the lake, and allow accessory dwellings between the cottage, the property, and the road.
Okay.
So we changed that. But there was a broader point that Mayor Norman's bringing up, is that in the hamlets, there's a prohibition against accessory buildings in the front yard.
Unless it's a garage. So I could build a rat trap garage,
yeah,
and paint it purple, pink, and blue,
yeah,
but I couldn't build a cute little storage building.
That is
if I had a 100-foot driveway.
That is the discussion that fell
which
PAC
doesn't,
that.
Which to me, I mean, I can understand 20 feet, like 25 feet like it is now. Like leave that
or
20.
Whatever, 10,
yeah.
Whatever the.
Well, right now it's 25 feet, 7.6 meters. You can't put any accessory dwellings there.
Buildings.
Accessory buildings.
Yeah.
You can't put them there.
Yeah.
But the new rules are saying you can't have any, regardless of how big your front yard is.
Yes.
And that's like, and.
There was some discussion about the aesthetics, the aesthetics of hamlets and what was intended for that. We can go in a different direction.
Yeah, I understand what Darlene is saying, because if your property is 100, 200 feet back from Southwest Portland Road or Central Portland Road, to me, really, if you're on the ocean, I would consider that more
my
of like
friend.
Your front yard. So I think that needs a change.
You have to consider the neighborhood, though. So if you're in Milton, you're driving up Highway 8, all the houses are right along the roadway there, okay, or even on West Street, okay? And would you want people putting their outbuildings or whatever they're going to call them right there on the roadway? And then so if you're in Brooklyn, the same issue applies. And so what happens is you get all these houses along the road, and somebody's got a house in the back, and then someone says, well, I'm far enough back, I'll put my barn right there by those people's houses. So then you're gonna have house, barn, house, garage, barn, barn, and you're gonna destroy the hamlet nature of that rural community. That's the nature I understand to why that was came into place or why the discussion was.
That was our discussion at PHC.
Yeah, and so it's not that you don't want to prohibit people and say if you got 100 feet, there's lots of room there. The issue is that you're putting them all along the roadway, and you're putting garages, barns, outbuildings, whatever you're going to put right next to people's houses.
Well, why don't we just say they have to be, they can't be 25 feet?
And yeah, they can't be, you know.
Like they have to be back a minimum 25 feet.
But you're putting it back the same size as the house has to be back 25 feet, so.
The way they have it now.
But you can put
a garage right up there.
If that's what council wants to do, I mean, you can change the bylaw or change the rules, but just remember that it's gonna damage the nature of a hamlet in a nice urban, it's gonna be a nice semi-urban area with house. You're gonna have house, barn, garage, all along the same street line.
You're allowed to have garages.
Some front yard setbacks are 10 feet, too, not 25.
So that section for accessory buildings, that mirrors the same as what is used in the urban serviced areas as well. The hamlets are being treated the same as urban areas.
And you could put a garage there. That's what I don't get. You're allowed to put a garage in your front yard, but you couldn't put a cute little carriage house or a greenhouse in your front yard. But you could build a garage. And it doesn't say what the garage has to look like. It doesn't have to be attached to your house.